So one of the next cases that we want to talk about is the Exmark versus Briggs & Stratton case. And as I mentioned, this is a case that was handed down on January the 12th, so only 2 days after the Finjan case we just spoke about. Central to this case is the issue of apportionment. And having two, again, from the damages perspective, having two decisions come down this close together, as you can appreciate, I currently had reports going out at the same time, and your head's kind of spinning of what did this expert do right or do wrong, and is this the way that we've always done it, or is there something that's changing now because of these decisions? And the Exmark case was interesting. Just a quick background for those that aren't familiar with it is it's effectively a lawnmower, a commercial lawnmower. Kind of the riding lawnmowers that are the ones we see the big deck on them that you'll see, you know, mowing the medians in neighborhoods or on highways. A particular issue in this case is there was a flow control baffle within the lawnmower itself, which was really the element that was the parties were claiming infringement of. The Exmark's damages expert used a 5% royalty rate and applied that rate to the entire sale price of the mower itself. And Briggs' argument was that the expert violated the entire market value rule because they applied a rate times the entire mower, when in fact the infringing component, if you will, is only a baffle. And so this comes directly from the CAFC's opinion, which is, as you can see, you have the entire deck, the mower deck with the three blades, and then the colored portions are the infringing element of the mowers themselves. And what's interesting within this case is, as I've put up on the slide, is that claim one itself cites a multi-blade lawn mower. So the claim is for a lawn mower. And then within the claim, it also talks about the flow control baffle, and I didn't put the whole thing here for space, but you have a curved, straight, and curved portion, which the parties or Exmark claims actually helps to control airflow. There's a number of benefits attributed to the design of that airflow control baffle to allow for better cutting of grass, all sorts of benefits. But I wanted to demonstrate, at least so everybody could see, the distinction between the overall product and the element or component within the product which the infringement was being claimed. So the highlights of this from a damages perspective are the CAFC found that using the accused mower as a royalty base and then apportioning through the royalty rate is an acceptable methodology. One of the cases they cite back to is the Erickson versus D-Link case, which also had similar language as an appropriate methodology. But here, they provided three reasons. And what I would say from a damages perspective, this is probably one of the most instructive cases or more clearly written cases in terms of specifically apportioning through the rate as opposed to the base. But the reasons being is that the asserted claim one that was at issue, was directed to the lawnmower as a whole. So the claim language. Now for the patent examiners and the patent drafters in this room, there's clearly implications when drafting claim language of what it can ultimately result in from a damages perspective. There's a lot of debate on that, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not gonna even attempt to debate the importance of the claim drafting. But the other aspect of this case that's important is that what the panel found was that the negotiations in the real world are consistent with the use of the entire product as the royalty base. Oftentimes, for those that have been involved in drafting license agreements, very rarely do you see license agreements in which it's a subcomponent of a subcomponent of a piece of wire within a product that's your royalty base. Oftentimes, it's the overall product that is saleable or is sold and tracked by the company that is the licensed product as defined by the agreement. So what's interesting is that this decision or opinion specifically says this is consistent, using the mower is consistent with a real-world negotiation. So what goes on within real world? And I know from my experience and assisting clients in licensing negotiations outside of the context of litigation is that it's consistent with what we see when doing licensing deals. And then secondly, the third opinion is that it's consistent with the settlement agreement. There was a comparable agreement within this case which use the lawnmower as a royalty base. So one of the other issues we mentioned a moment ago is that looking at those comparable agreements and using those as a basis or support for why you picked the royalty base or the royalty rate that you did. Now, as I mentioned a moment ago, they adopted the use of the entire value of the mower as the base. However, the court in this case indicated and struck the expert's opinion and remanded to the district court, stating that the royalty rate itself should be excluded because there was no basis or reasoning as to how the expert arrived at the 5% rate after her analysis of the Georgia-Pacific factors. What's interesting about this is even though the case was remanded only, I think, October the 12th, so a couple weeks ago, the district court ruled on the Daubert motion filed against the same expert with the same opinion using the same 5% rate and denied the Daubert motion against that expert, indicating that the expert's report sufficiently addressed all of the reasons and bases as to how she arrived at her 5% rate, tying all of the evidence that she relied upon in her initial report, although tying it together presumably more succinctly within her report so that it could be determined how her rate was ultimately derived out of the 15 factors.